Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with midlife weight loss coach Holly Bertone. Holly and I speak about how she helps career women ditch emotional eating and how to break free from viewing food as comfort. I hope you enjoy the episode, and please, if you like this show, subscribe and give us a rating or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much, and as always, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now on to my conversation with Holly. Holly Bertone, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lisa, so much for having me. And I'm excited to be here and really connect with your listeners.
I'm really excited to speak with you as well. You have a very, very interesting background and a very interesting message to share for us. So what's the number one thing you are excited for our listeners to learn today?
The number one, I actually have two. Number one is that I really want to break the stigma around emotional eating. And for those individuals who are listening, who are struggling with the snacking and just the constant cravings and just feeling like I just keep putting food in my mouth and I can't stop, I want you to know that there is no shame. So I'm excited for them to learn that. But then also how to incorporate FBI tactics into really countering those that emotional eating too, because that's going to be so much fun.
Awesome. And yes, I mean, you're already touching on your background here. So please do tell us how you got into being a midlife weight loss coach.
Yeah, so I definitely want to get into that and get into my story. But before I do, I really want to say, Lisa, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. And I admire the work that you do here with all of the different guests and the different backgrounds and just really looking at, you know, nutrition, health, and life from that holistic perspective. So for all the women listening, I want you to do me a huge favor. I want you to leave Lisa a 5-star rating and review because it's going to help her podcast reach so many more people. I left a rating and review this morning, 5 stars, nice review. And so if you could do that too, that would mean a lot to me as a guest.
Thank you so much, Holly. I really, really appreciate you saying that. That means
yes. Yeah, absolutely. So, and someone listening may have thought to themselves at one point or asked themselves at one point, how is it that I can be so smart and successful and have a great career and great family and pillar of my community and all these things, but I struggle with putting food in my mouth all of the time or thinking about food, that just obsessive food noise. And I know what it's like because I'm actually a recovered emotional eater of over 40 years. So I was overweight at one point in time. I was 150 pounds and I was a 110 pound mountain bike racer, thin and athletic. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter the years. It didn't matter the weight. I ate my emotions on a daily basis. And I'll give you a perfect example of this because this might relate to some people. When I was at the FBI, and this was daily, I would take a family size bag of M&Ms. And Lisa, I had to get peanut, of course, because we got to get our protein in. Girls got to get our protein in. But I would dump the M&Ms out on my desk. I'd color code them, right? And then I would speed eat them with my left hand and I would crank out a PowerPoint deck with my right hand because the stress of the job, it was so overwhelming and I needed just that food to comfort me. Mm. So this is just one example, but if you can fast forward a few years, and this was a few years ago, and this is going to be embarrassing to admit to you as a fellow health professional, and especially to all your listeners. So I am going to share this, but this was after years after I had resigned from the FBI and I was already a health coach. And every Thursday, I would already start looking forward to Friday afternoon because I was super disciplined all week. So Friday afternoon, I would treat myself and I'd get a pint of ice cream. And I'm a Pennsylvania girl. So that sweet, salty combination, I would get some popcorn, make it on the stove, have that ice cream. And it was salted caramel. It was a salted caramel ice cream. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to eat a third on Friday, a third on Saturday, and a third on Sunday. Because everything in moderation, a third of a pint of ice cream, like that's completely reasonable, right? Yeah. So that pint disappeared on Friday another pint disappeared on Saturday and another pint would disappear on Sunday. And this was every single weekend. But there was one Sunday in particular that really stood out. And I was at the bottom of that third pint. And it was one of those, I didn't want the ice cream to end. I just inhaled it. I didn't even taste it. And then I didn't want it to end. I wanted to keep eating. And my spoon is at the bottom of the container and it's in the groove trying to get that last little bit of chocolate out, like literally just dissecting the spoon into the groove. And I am staring at my spoon. I'm staring at the groove. I'm staring at the bottom of the container. I'm like, Holly Bertone, what is wrong with you? Like, why can't I just eat a few bites like a normal person? Why can't I just have a few bites and put it back in the freezer? And just that realization, just confronting myself in that moment, there was so much shame because I am a health coach. I help my students and my clients do better. And I couldn't do it for myself. And that shame was just suffocating. It was embarrassing. And the thing was, I justified it to myself year after year because I was at a healthy weight. I worked hard all week. I deserved a treat. So in my head, there's always that justification. And maybe someone listening has had one of those times in their lives where they feel like they're putting on appearances every time they go outside or every time there's a Facebook post or something that they've got it all together. But then behind closed doors, I mean, I was a hot mess express and I didn't want anyone to know my secret. So I went upstairs and I had a moment and I went upstairs and I looked, I did a 360 in my closet and I looked at all these clothes and I love clothes, love clothes, but I didn't wear them because they were just enough too tight that they fit, but they were just really uncomfortable. And in that moment, I thought back to how much I wouldn't even look at myself in the mirror when I was 40 pounds overweight because I hated how fat I looked, how I wouldn't even look in the mirror during breast cancer treatment and when I was dealing with autoimmune disease because of everything it did to my body. And again, just hated how I looked. And I vowed that this needs to stop, that I am not going to go back to that place and that something needs to change. And it was really hard to admit to myself because all these years I kept saying, well, I'm at a healthy weight. I'm a health coach, right? But what I learned is that it doesn't matter how much you weigh. It doesn't matter how healthy you eat most of the time. Because if you're struggling with emotional eating, that food noise is always going to win. And that's when I realized it's not just me, that there's so many women who are battling the same kind of, they got the demanding lifestyle, and then they've got the stress eating and the food noise, and then the shame on top of it. The shame's like the red bow that goes on top of it. And that's when I came actually a little obsessed and I put my FBI hat back on and I went to work because I'm here thinking, okay, the weight loss industry has all of these lies out there that they send to us every single day. So what is it that they don't want us to know? And when I realized that getting to that root cause, it's about addressing those root cause triggers. It's about addressing those automatic eating patterns. And these are what's driving our behaviors. These patterns control everything. So if we're going to change, maybe we should start at the beginning. Maybe we should actually start at that place where we're going to rewire those patterns. And that's when everything changed for me. And that's when everything started to change for the women who I coached. And I think it's important that, yeah, I mean, I've got the pieces of paper on the wall that say I'm certified to coach. Yay. But here's the thing is that everything I'm going to share today, every way that I coach now, this was built on those food monsters that I overcame personally. And I combined it with my skills in FBI counterintelligence, analyzing patterns and countering threats. And then I combined that with the brain science of neuroplasticity. And that's when it just became game on.
That's amazing. Holly, thank you so much, first of all, for sharing your personal story with us. I know that this is resonating with many of the listeners, especially the aspect of planning out the food, rewarding yourself. I was good all week. That's why I deserve it. But then also feeling guilty about it, not actually enjoying because, my philosophy, and I think you share the same attitude, is that there is no good and bad foods. All foods are absolutely acceptable in moderation. And as long as my point is always, I want people to make the conscious decision in the moment so that afterwards you're also feeling happy about that. And if someone's offering you a piece of cake and you love that cake and it's worth it for you in that moment, then please go ahead and enjoy it, but not to the point where you're like, oh, I wish I wouldn't have eaten that, or you're picking yourself apart afterwards. And so I know what you said absolutely resonates with many of the people listening. And I'm so excited to hear about these strategies that you're going to uncover for us when it comes to addressing the food relationship and how we can slowly peel back the layers to really heal our relationship with food. So with your clients and also with yourself actually at that time, what was the first step or the first few steps that you underwent?
Yeah. So actually, if you don't mind, before we get into the steps, I'd actually like to talk about what doesn't work and what got us here,
Sure.
because I think it's a great place to start with uncovering, some of the things that we are doing that maybe we need to think about first, and then we can dive into the steps. And just as an aside, actually, right before we jumped on air, I'm working on a lesson plan. So I'm a mentor for Go Girls Go, which is like Girls on the Run. It's we've got 36 fourth and fifth grade girls. And so I'm going to be teaching them on belly hungry versus brain hungry.
Love that.
And and I was really thinking, I got a little emotional, and my lesson's tomorrow, but I got a little emotional when I was preparing it because I said, this is the age where things start. I mean, it might be a little older, it might be a little later, but the women that I work with are mostly in midlife, and this is we're untangling decades of these patterns that are ingrained in us. And I don't know, I got a little just kind of nostalgic and sentimental and just a little like teary-eyed in a good way, thinking what a huge honor to be able to work with these girls at a place where a lot of this stuff starts. With the food, with the body image. So I can be even getting a little emotional now just thinking about it.
Oh, that's
So
such wonderful work that you're doing. And like you're saying, before these patterns perhaps establish or at least get ingrained, because of course, even in our childhood years, we observe our moms and the people around us, how they eat, how they talk about their body, the food, and everything else. But yes, 13, 14, what a great place to jump in.
So, and some of these patterns are, and you even kind of mentioned, the moderation, the mindful eating, the willpower. And here's the way, in terms of looking at this from that emotional eating perspective. And I want to be crystal clear because I 100% agree in everything in moderation, mindful eating, and willpower. I personally use it. I know you do. I mean, it's just, it works. But here's the big but is that if that food noise is obsessive, what we need to do is get on the other side before these things start to work. Because what I found is that these three concepts, the everything in moderation, the mindful eating, the willpower, a lot of women struggle with. And it doesn't work because they're used to this structure, this pattern of, when you think of when you learn to drive a car, when you learn to play a sport, when you learned a musical instrument, I learn the thing, I get better at the thing, and then I'm good at the thing. But dieting and diet culture doesn't work that way, right? I mean, you diet and then there's a failure, and then there's a diet, and then there's a failure. Or, I'm going to be try to be, mindful eating, and then I'm, eating a few bites of ice cream, and then the next thing I know, I'm at the bottom of the container. Like, well, those first two bites were really mindful, but the rest of the pint, I don't even remember eating. Like I said, it was everything in moderation. Oh, I'm going to have a pint over a course of 3 days, which I think is perfectly acceptable, but a pint one a day for 3 days. That's a little obsessive. So when we look at things like that, how can we get to the other side of it? And especially because I know willpower, so many women think that they need more willpower. They think it's mind over matter. And I like to say willpower is like a SWAT team armed with a Cabbage Patch Kid. I mean, you're coming in, you're trying to break down the door, and you've got a Cabbage Patch Kid, right? Like, it's like, okay, this is not working. And there's actually the researchers at MIT, and what they found is that the second that craving hits, whether you see food, you think about food, you smell food, and you're looking at it from that, something happens, a stressful event, a lot of the stress eating or the reward eating, and you have that moment where you're like, all of a sudden, I need food. I need cookies, I need chips, whatever that is. And your brain has made a decision in about half of a second, even a little bit less than half of a second, that you are going to eat the food regardless of anything else. And that's what the researchers at MIT found. And then what we're going to do is we're going to add dopamine into the mix. And I know people think of dopamine like, babies and puppies, like, oh, it's the reward chemical and it's the feel-good chemical, but it's actually the anticipation chemical. And that, so you're thinking, okay, all of this happens in half of a second. Dopamine's kicking in anticipation of eating the food. So you're going to get that dopamine hit before the food even touches your mouth. And that's why these cravings feel so automatic and obsessive, because your brain has already had that reward process before you've even had a bite. So, and then we can also throw in, just for good measure, the ego depletion theory from Baumeister in the late 1900s, which sounds like decades ago. It actually is. But what he found is that the more decisions that we make throughout the day, the weaker our ability to resist cravings. So, and you think about it from a logical perspective, like, okay, well, when I wake up in the morning, I'm really not craving things. But at night, sitting down, Netflix, right? That's when it's like, oh, game over. So when we think about things like the moderation, the willpower, the mindful eating, again, yes, they work. But if you're still on the side of having that obsessive food noise and the cravings, let's address that first before we start putting these into action. So if someone's listening, you're like, yeah, I've tried that, but it hasn't worked. This is exactly why.
Yeah, that all makes complete sense. I like what you said about dopamine, and dopamine so misunderstood in many aspects.
Right.
Dopamine is great in the pursuit of anything. Like if someone wants to get started on a project, we need to have some sort of dopamine drive. So absolutely, we don't want to minimize the importance and the benefits of dopamine. But yeah, to your point and to the point of food, I think we've all experienced that looking forward to a specific meal, or even just like my favorite coffee, I look forward to it every single day. And if it's not prepared the way that I wanted, we feel a little bit disappointed. It's like, oh, what? Like this is not what I want. And this is like the reward prediction error that sometimes we have. So our brain sort of saves, okay, you love this coffee. This coffee is awesome. It makes you feel this and that way. And next time it's supposed to feel exactly the same way. And so if we plan our binges or whatever, kind of like you did, that's exactly what your brain's already thinking. Like you're gonna feel like this and that, at least for a moment. Afterwards, you might feel shit, but during this time, you will feel great. And that's why you're even more excited to plan it and to for those specific foods that, fortunately, in many cases, are very predictable. Like your pint of ice cream, you knew what it was gonna taste like, but it makes it so hard to break that cycle. So I love how you explained that for us. And yes, so what is the next phase after realizing, okay, I need help. I can't
Yeah.
just rely on moderation
So
and what.
I wanted to go a little bit backwards before we go
Yes.
forward. So before I get into step one, and we're looking at step one from this perspective, is I grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania, and I did not learn how to parallel park my car ever. And nor did I learn when I became an adult. I lived in outside of the city, and yeah, I just never learned to parallel park. But in 2021, I bought a brand new Hyundai Kona and it had a backup camera in it. And I realized in about a second's time that I could parallel park because I had that backup camera.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did not go to parallel parking school. I did not learn how to parallel park. All I did was have a tool in my car that helps me to see. It helps me to navigate to parallel park. And that is exactly what we're doing when we talk about rewiring your brain. Is I didn't get new parking skills. I just got a new tool. And this is where we're going to start looking at the FBI counterintelligence tactics combined with the science of neuroplasticity. So step one is see it. And this is where we use FBI inspired pattern analysis. We're going to uncover those hidden patterns first. We're going to uncover the hidden patterns and those triggers behind the emotional eating so you can actually understand why you're reaching for food, why that food noise is so obsessive. Because when you know why, you're like, okay, now I actually can have a game plan to know how to fix it. And Lisa, correct me if I'm wrong. You were police in, is it New Zealand?
In New Zealand, yes.
Is that correct?
That's
yeah.
Correct.
So you're, this is probably right up your alley. So when we think about rewiring our brain, it's just like a trail in the woods. So our brain goes down this well-worn path that has been there for decades. Just everything in life, that this path, it keeps growing. It keeps getting more and more ingrained. And this is the only path your brain knows, the only path your brain cares about, and the only path your brain wants to go down because it is comfortable, it is safe. So what we are doing, we are getting out our gloves and our work boots, and we are going to make a new path. So, and I say that because when we make a new path, yeah, it's going to be some work involved. There's a lot of brush. There's going to be some thorns and spiders and snakes, and you might sweat a little, you might get a little, cut on your arm from the thorns, right? So there is going to be a little bit of work involved to make this new path in the woods. So see it is where we recognize, number one, our brain is going down that old path and what it is, and the fact that we need to start making the new path. And I'll give you a perfect example of this. Was last year I was speaking at MIT, and I'm on a getting ready to get on the plane, and there was a huge delay. It was like 3 hours, and I'm just sitting there on my laptop, and I am watching. So this is see it. This is watching. This is observing. No judgment, just watching and observing. And what I'm watching during that 3 hour delay is people were getting really agitated. They were going to the counter. They were yelling at the flight attendants. They were running over to Dunkin' Donuts, filling their bags with bagels and donuts. They were going to the bar at 8 o'clock in the morning and drinking. Right. So this is awareness of when I am stressed, when I'm seeking reward, when I'm bored, when I'm lonely, when I'm in the scenario, when it's a certain time of day, then I reach for food because food equals comfort. So I reach for food because, actually, I'll share a story with you. This one's kind of hard to share, but I hopefully, hopefully no one is going through this, but I think from a perspective they can relate. Was in 2011, I was going through breast cancer treatment, 2010, 2011, surgery, chemo, radiation. And my stepson was in second grade at the time, and he's like 22 now. but what I would do is I would go into work early. So work at the FBI, go into work early, work a few hours, leave work, drive to the hospital, go to chemo for, I don't know, 4 to 6 hours, get poison injected in me, leave chemo, drive across town, go pick up my stepson from school. And you want to know what we did on the way home?
Dunkin' Donuts.
Well, we stopped at Dairy Queen for a blizzard. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I don't think anyone would say, oh my goodness, Holly, you had such a hard day. You deserve a treat. Like, oh my goodness, what a horrible day, like between the work and the chemo and then, stepmom doing all the things, like just so much. And the thing was, Lisa, is that I had this horrible metal taste in my mouth. My stomach was completely nauseous. I was not hungry at all. But I needed that blizzard to take the edge off because of the amount of stress that I had that day. And that's what I'm saying. Hopefully, no one's going through anything like that, but it can maybe relate to having so much stress and just being pulled in a million different directions. Like, I have to take the edge off. So, that is the awareness. That's step one. That's stop it. So, step one is see it. I'm sorry. So, step two is stop it. And this is where we're going to learn FBI inspired tactics. We're going to interrupt the cycle in real time to stop those cravings. And again, remember we talked about the less than half of a second and that dopamine. So when you think about it back to that path in the woods, you've got the well-worn path that your brain knows and is familiar and wants to go down. And you're now in the process of creating that new path. You're clearing the brush, you're getting rid of the thorns and the spiders and the snakes and the rocks, which again, got our work gloves on and our boots. It's a little bit of work. So our brain is coming up to the fork between those two paths. So this is where this happens. So we're at a place where our brain is going to want to automatically go to the old path, but this is where we tell our brain to stop it. And we tell our brain, okay, we're making a new path. It's not done yet. It's still a work in progress. And yeah, you still might have to go through some rocks and some thorns. But we're going to go to this new path today. So this is stop it. And what we do is we implement countermeasures. And countermeasures, it sounds like a big word. We did them in counterintelligence, but they are basically strategic actions to prevent the threat before it happens. And that's it. So when you think about it from the context of emotional eating, these countermeasures, they're just a tactical intervention in that half of a second. Right? That's going to intercept that craving before they take over. And I like to kind of joke about it. The FBI, you're like, okay, you've got Russian spies over here and you've got cake day at the office over here. It doesn't matter because a threat is a threat, and using these exact same tactics. And we can interrupt the dopamine. We really can interrupt the dopamine. And I have a pug. His name is Hannibal. I thought it would be hilarious to name my puppy Hannibal. But when we got him as a puppy, I had to potty train him. I mean, you potty train a puppy. So what do? For the first, I don't even know how long it took, but what, 3, 4 months or whatever to potty train a puppy. You're getting the pee pads down and you're taking him outside constantly. You're rewarding him, when he goes potty outside, go potty, go potty, and you're giving him the treats and everything. Well, we are literally potty training our brain. That is the exact same thing that we are doing, is that every time our brain goes to the new path, we're giving it a reward. Yay, go brain. So we're interrupting that craving, we're stopping it, and we're making it better to do the new thing than to go on the old path.
I love it. Yes, I mean, I love both of these steps. See it, stop it, and especially with the stop it, I have several thoughts to that. So first of all, in
Yeah,
regards to your
absolutely.
example with your really, really, really stressful, busy day, work, cancer treatment, stepson, in terms of stopping it, or better said, in terms of preventing that quote unquote craving to come in, some practical strategies could have been potentially, well, number one, maybe go for a brief walk after work before hitting the treatment. Number two, maybe asking a friend to pick up your stepson and then meeting with them later on at the home and just playing some cards or something to distract your mind in a different way, or cooking a healthy dinner or picking up some fruit or something like that, something that actually might have served your body better in the time as well. Maybe those are some suggestions that just came to mind, as in, because I think it always helps to have like practical alternatives. But yeah, with regards to the stop it, I think what you said so nicely about the rewarding yourself every time as well. And again, people hear reward and they think, what do you mean? Like reward, the only type of reward that they know is food reward, but there's so many other ways. And anyone listening, I want to encourage you to think of other ways that you can reward yourself with that are not food. And I mean, hopefully also not alcohol, but maybe it can be a nice cup of tea. It can be a good phone call with a friend. It can be drawing yourself a bath, and that's always the go-to example for self-care. I don't always want to go there, but it can be other things. So maybe put together a list of 5 to 10 things that you enjoy doing. Maybe at first it might seem like you don't enjoy them as much as your pint of ice cream, but over time, when you do follow that path, rather, I'm telling yourself, hey, I did that really well. Maybe if I do that 10 times in a row, I'm going to buy myself a new top, or I'm going to, whatever it might be. I do think that in this particular point, accountability, so people like you or I, or even a group, your spouse, a best friend, whatever, come in really, 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 really helpful. Because in the moment, it's easy to ditch the goals when then suddenly you see that old path and you're like, oh, I know that this one is safe. Why would I go down the other path again and scratch up again and all of that? And so if you have someone saying like, no, I'm waiting at the end of this good path, you were t telling me you're going to report back to me once you get to this good path. That's really helpful. I am a huge believer, obviously, an advocate for accountability, and I think it's very closely linked to the stop that you're mentioning.
And I love what you said because I didn't have any of these tools back then. And I did what I think is absolutely classic behavior for high achieving women is I just was like, I'm not going to ask for help. I'm just going to do it because that's what we do. We just do it. We see the thing that we have to do and we just do it. And we don't think twice. We don't ask for help. We don't want to bother anyone and we just do it. And I'm so glad that you brought that up because I was in that mindset. In fact, I was working with a client just last night on a situation and, just helping her realize, oh, I can have boundaries. I can ask for help. I can say, I'm not going to do this, or I'm going to do this in a different way. And it was just this light bulb moment. And when you said that, it was just, it brought me kind of the 360 of how far, that you can come with good coaching. Is to be able to say, okay, I'm not going to do all of this myself. I can ask for help, and it's not a character flaw to ask for help. You
Not a
know,
character
asking
flaw
for
and
help is a point of self-care.
exactly, and I think in the end, most of the time, we end up doing things a lot better because the few things that we are then able to commit to and devote ourselves to, we have more time from. You might have spent more or better quality time with your stepson, and he might have felt your presence even more than you have worrying about this and already thinking about your workday tomorrow here and all of this. So yeah, I'm single focus for me all the way. Even though it is hard and I'm a recovering, hey, I can do it all, watch me go as well.
And the other point too, we can kind of talk about is that we've inherited a lot of our patterns from our own behaviors and habits and history and past, but then also what we kind of inherited from our parents and our kids and our grandkids are inheriting those same things from us. And we're not doing it on purpose. It's completely unintentional. There's no blame whatsoever. But from that perspective of looking back at that moment in time, was every single week that I ate chemo, that was what we did. And he got a blizzard too. So I was training him, hey, you have a hard day, you go get some ice cream. And so it isn't just looking at this from a cycle from our own perspective and how to stop it within ourselves, but then thinking about it from a legacy perspective is how can we help our kids and our grandkids be able to look at big emotions and handle big emotions without reaching for food? I mean, and you think about it from the perspective of we can't even stand in line at the grocery store for with more than one person in front of us. I mean, everyone's like getting out the phone and scrolling because they can't stand to just stand there. And just be for 5 minutes to wait in line. I mean, this is kind of where we're at. So if we can't even be just alone in our own thoughts for 5 minutes, imagine how hard it is to really handle those big emotions when they come up, the stress, the anger, the agitation, the frustration, the fear, the anxiety, all these things. And when you can actually learn that, it's also something you can teach your kids and grandkids too.
Beautiful. That is wonderful. Holly, I'm curious, what's step number three or
Yes, I would love it. So step number three is shift it. And this is where we're going to rewire those automatic responses so that number one, it's automatic. And then number two, we actually do have that healthier and just effortless relationship with food. So that food doesn't equal comfort, food just equals food. And we can make smart, intelligent decisions based on data or what we want versus those obsessive cravings that are driving it. And this is where we've got that path in the woods. So instead of going down the old path, the brain is now, it's not even hesitating. It's like, I'm going to the new path, it's shiny and I love it and it's much better. So our brain is now on that new path. And then that old path is starting to get overgrown, which is really cool too. And there's a study that was done in the year 2000. And I love the study. What they did was they looked at London taxi cab drivers. And when you think about what we didn't have in the year 2000, we didn't have smartphones. We didn't have Google or what do you call it, Garmins or GPS or anything like that. We had maps, old-fashioned maps, and our head to figure out how to get from point A to point B. So the London taxi cab drivers would actually memorize the streets of London. So they went through a training, they memorized the streets. And what they found was that their brains, the brains that were responsible for things like memory and navigation, it's the hippocampus, but it was bigger in them than it was in the control group. And the cab drivers that were more advanced, that had been driving for more years, actually had larger brains as well in terms of that region. So it kind of tells us that, okay, we actually can change our brain. Like our brain is pliable. It's not fixed, and we can change it. And back to my stepson, I love telling stories about him. But when he was a little guy, and for anyone who has kids, they can probably relate. So when he was a little guy, he hated to brush his teeth, which I think most kids do. And I mean, it was begging and cajoling and nagging and bribing and all the things we have to do to get the kid to brush his teeth. Well, what he would do was he got a little sneaky and he would run his toothbrush under the water and be like, yeah, stepmom, I brush my teeth. And I'm like, and I was like, okay, show me. And he showed me his wet toothbrush. And I'm like, let me smell your breath. And I'm like, oh God, go brush your teeth. So, but that's how we operate as kids. We hate brushing our teeth. But now as an adult, and Lisa, and I'm sure everyone listening, we don't have post-it notes up on our bathroom mirror saying that we're a wonderful human being because we brush our teeth. We don't binge listen to podcasts and books on Audible about brushing our teeth. We don't have apps on our phone dinging and reminding us to brush our teeth, right? We just brush our teeth. And if it's a crazy busy morning, everything just goes chaos. You're running late. You can't find your keys. You can't find your glasses. You get in an argument with your spouse. The dog poops on the carpet. Well, guess what? You're probably still going to brush your teeth before you leave. Like that's just it's automatic and it's a non-negotiable. And you're probably also going to have some coffee in your hand before you leave the house. Like automatic and a non-negotiable. And this is where you can actually be. It is possible to be in this place with emotional eating, where you can be around those food triggers and food is just food. And I hear so many times where, a woman I'm talking to and she'll be like, oh, well, I tell my spouse or my kids I'm on a diet and I tell them not to bring the junk food in the house. And the next thing I know, the cookies and the cupcakes, they're on the counter. And then I ate them. And I was like, okay, and then what happened? And she's like, well, of course I yelled at them for bringing it home. Like, actually, that's on you. That's not on them. And that's what this looks like, is that there's no argument with the spouse or the kids over, being quote unquote on a diet and can't bring food in the house. It's like I can be around this food and it does absolutely nothing to me at all. And it is possible to be there, just like with brushing your teeth.
What a wonderful goal to have. Well, I thank you also for painting the picture. And I think with the teeth, with the toothbrushing, it rings true to our everybody. It's like, yeah, no, I don't really think about that. That's just part of my routine, just part of what you do. And I often bring that up when people are like, I don't like vegetables. I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, you will get, first of all, our taste buds are so adaptable. It's so beautiful, actually. So you will grow to like broccoli or whatever else people don't like. That's a really good point. But also at some point you're just gonna say, I need to have a portion of vegetables on my plate, full stop. And that's actually one thing that I really like about your content as well, that you don't just say, okay, it's only the emotional side that we need to dig up, and that's gonna allow you to be on point with your not stress eating and so on. It's also you recognize and you teach your clients that what we eat and how we eat it plays such as big of a role. I love that you're a big advocate for protein, because protein is so closely linked with various neurotransmitters and just how our brain functions. So if we don't feed our body the right things, it's not to a surprise that only the emotional eating and all of that is worse and is harder to have the quote unquote willpower to resist those kind of foods. So we do need to make sure that we have our basics covered in the sense of vegetables, and actually giving our body the satiation cues on that front, in addition to uncovering all that programming, all those little ways that we've laid ground for, unfortunately, and where we want to walk instead. So if we do both of that together, like you're teaching so beautifully, I think that's a really, really great method. And I just briefly want to say to anyone listening as well, Holly has an online quiz where people can go and check out and see, is it what type of emotional eater you are, that kind of thing, and everything
Yeah,
that.
it is. And it's basically for you if you are a woman who's not in control around food and you're stress eating and you're snacking. And the quiz is actually set up, it's almost like a personality profile, which is really cool because it's not your typical BuzzFeed feed. It's like it's an actual psychological analysis and profile. So you actually understand what's driving the triggers. And I actually have a really cool gift for your listeners too. That's actually only that I give for my paid clients that I would love to share
Wow.
with them too.
Please. Yeah, tell us what it's about.
Yeah, so it's the Emotional Eating Tactical Blueprint. So you get the quiz again, which you can get anywhere, but the second one in the bundle is what I reserve just for my clients. And it's something you can't find it anywhere online. Like nowhere online, is only behind the firewall. And it's called the Crime Scene Files Emotional Eating Edition. And it's set up like if you get geeked out with true crime podcasts or those CSI and Law and Order shows on TV, you are going to get totally geeked out with this. It's so cool. So it's going to where
I
you go
love
from,
it.
yeah, it's a training. You're going to go from understanding those patterns. You're actually going to get the tactical tools to intercept the triggers and the behaviors when they happen. So,
Awesome. I will
yes.
absolutely make sure to link that in the show notes. And if you like what Holly is teaching you and showing you in that beautiful gift that she's giving us, you should also check out her 10-day break free program to work with her and start uncovering all these things. But yeah, so let's go back to the stop to our well, no, actually stop was number two. So we were on number three
Oh,
was
yes.
the third S was
See it, stop it, shift it.
shifted. Okay,
Shift it.
great. And so once we get to this point, we then transition into sustainable approaches, or is there a
Yes.
fourth S?
Yeah, that's it. That's where the sustainable approach happens. And
Okay,
again,
gotcha.
this is just focused on emotional eating. I mean,
Love it.
obviously we're not getting into, the weight and the management and all the things at this point, but when we look at just emotional eating, these three steps are going to get you so much further and give you that foundation so that you can have your body ready to go to change those habits, to change the nutrition, to start working out, to start sleeping better, to all of the things. It is going to have the ripple effect.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Holly, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. Honestly, I love the three-step progress. And for someone who has a logical mind like myself and like many of the type A sort of people listening, this sounds like a fabulous program that they should absolutely check out. So please check out all of Holly's content, especially her wonderful free gift in the show notes. And Holly, just thank you so, so much for your time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And actually, if they want the free gift, they can go to my Instagram. It's at holly.bertone, BERTONE, and just DM me the word blueprint and I'll send it right over.
Awesome. Thank you, Holly.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lisa.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Holly. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner, Fat Muscle Project, has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening.